do a little bit of a mindset shift. So instead of thinking about what are we selling, I want you to think about why customers are buying. That small shift will allow you to kind of unlock the reasons why customers should be interacting with you as a brand and what problems that you could be solving for them, be that some kind of skin concern, or you're alleviating a little bit of guilt because they want to be fashion forward but are worried about the environment. Just really zeroing in on the way that your brand is solving a customer's problem will help kind of unlock interesting content that you can send, and just being really certain about what those reasons are.
You're listening to the Keep Optimizing Podcast to increase your traffic, improve your conversion rates, and grow your profits.
Hello and welcome. I'm Chloe Thomas, the host of this e-commerce marketing focused podcast. If you're not familiar with our format, we release 5-episode mini-series that dive deep into one e-commerce marketing topic at a time. It could be channels like email or SEO or Facebook ads, or a big topic like acquisition, retention, or analytics. In each episode, new ones released on Wednesdays, I get to interview a different expert to explore the latest advice on making that marketing method work for you. And then after each 5-episode mini-series, we take a week off to give you time to take action on what you've learned. At the moment, we're picking up the email marketing thread again. So in this episode, we're kicking things off with a challenge I know anyone who's responsible for email marketing has faced at some point or another. What on earth do we say? How are we going to go do this when we've run out of ideas? This is particularly relevant for you if you have a small number of SKUs, a small number of products, but it's going to be equally relevant if you are big SKU businesses too. My guest will be taking us essentially through how to go about creating the right newsletter promotional calendar, what content to create, how to work out what content to create, how to work out how much of each type of content to create, how that fits with your flows. She'll also be sharing some really great insight on how many emails you should be sending a week. So make sure you listen right to the end of the episode so you hear all of that, but also so you get to hear her answers to our quickfire insider tips round that I think you're going to find really useful too. I think it would be impossible to be in e-commerce and not have heard of Klaviyo. Over 193,000 brands in over 80 countries use Klaviyo to drive their email marketing, SMS campaigns, and sales performance. The way Klaviyo are incorporating AI and personalization across the platform is one to watch for all of us, enabling their users to really push ever upwards the performance of their customer communications. If you want to see what you can now get with the Klaviyo platform, maybe have a poke around to work out if it's yet time to migrate, then you can sign up for a free trial right now. Just head to keepopt.com/Klaviyo and find out if it's time for you to make the move. In this episode, I'm chatting with email marketing specialist Kate Hammond. Kate has been delivering CRM strategies in global markets since 2009, specializing in D2C growth, mainly on Klaviyo and Ametria. Via her agency, Sunbeam Marketing, she helps brands like Rani & Co., Noble Panacea and Syra to build out their email marketing, driving loyalty and retention. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Chloe.
Very cool to have you here on the podcast. Thank you so much for being up, for sharing your insights with us all. How did you get into the world of email marketing?
I kind of stumbled upon it by accident. I came into the world straight after university. So I earned my stripes at a kind of mini agency, which was the media wing of a bigger company, where we were dealing with these big kind of tech companies, and I was sending out the email marketing campaigns for them. So I learned a lot when I was there because we were, you know, really scrappy, really kind of sales-led and data-led, which was great for me as an introduction to the space. And from there, I went into in-house D2C, B2C companies. So I started off in Rosetta Stone, leading the email and CRM there for a couple of years, and then spent around a decade in startups. So Truva, Lovecrafts, Thread. And then I decided it was time to go self-employed and started working as a fractional CRM.
You've worked at so many fascinating businesses, not just in terms of their products, but in terms of their business models. You know, you've had marketplaces, courses, where, you know, subscription, and then the crazy world of crafting, which I've probably been in some of your flows, thanks to the Love Crochet website. So you've had some seriously wide experience in all kinds of different kind of like vertical sectors, business models and everything else. Do you find having all of that in the mixing pot makes it easier to help individual brands work out what they should be doing?
Yes, I do, because I think working at startups for, you know, a massive chunk of my career has forced me to be both on a really hands-on level and getting stuck into the data, stuck into the technical issues and troubleshooting and things like that, and understanding on the ground floor level, like what it takes to have a really strong CRM and a really strong email marketing strategy and a really robust customer database. And then it's allowed me also to zoom out so that I can do all of the strategic stuff, look at the bigger picture, weave in the different channels and elements of CRM and retention. So for me, I think it's been really interesting because I've spent that massive chunk of my career in businesses that have been dealing with, you know, tens of thousands of SKUs, sometimes over 100,000 SKUs. And then since working in a fractional capacity, I've worked with all different businesses, and a lot of them have these smaller curated ranges of products. So it presents like a really interesting challenge for me, but one that's, you know, you have to just really think creatively and about that.
I think it's having my experience working actually employed by brands was massive SKU sets. I'm not the 100,000 level, but certainly the, you know, the 100, 200, 300 kind of level SKU sets. And whenever, you know, you got stuck for something to you just take a look at the bestsellers list or the which category is performing well, and you just talk about a different product when you, you know, had a brain freeze, which is not necessarily the right approach. So I think we may be about to find out today. But when you've only got two SKUs, three SKUs, and there is so much less to talk about. So I think it's certainly throughout my 20 plus years dealing with email marketing, how to be interesting is a perennial problem, both in terms of what you've actually got in front of you, but also in terms of, you know, that big white blank promo calendar.
Absolutely.
Oh, we've got to create a welcome campaign. What should we put in? And I think you can look at all the blueprints you like, but it's not necessarily about copying someone else. So let me turn my ramble into a question for you, Kate. Where do you start when you're in that place of going, what on earth are we going to talk about? How do you tackle that?
So I'm going to focus on newsletters primarily in this, but I'd also really like to touch on flows. So this is your automated campaigns. So that will be triggered by either a customer action or a milestone that they've hit or you've set as a brand. And what these campaigns do is be really relevant, really timely, and really personalized. And they're much more effective than your broader brush newsletters, which still have their place and they're still really important. But recent research has proven that they drive 8 times more revenue than campaigns do. That research was done by Klaviyo. So they're super, super effective. And we just can't speak about one without the other. So I would spend a lot of time building out the kind of fundamentals within that and then think about putting some more time aside to think about your newsletters. But your most active and recent customers should be receiving your flows, and they'll naturally be more relevant to them.
I suppose that's kind of one of the things is if our flows are good, well built, etc., is talking about the right things, then that's almost the money making part dealt with. You know, because when someone's in the mindset, will have been picked up by a trigger, and they'll be getting those more transactional messages, which gives us more freedom to be more interesting, I suppose, with the newsletters. Is that a fair way to think about it? Or have I missed some nuance there?
No, not at all. I think that's really fair. I think people are starting to realize that email marketing is also a form of brand awareness. So it's a way to remain relevant. It's a way to be top of mind for your customers, even if they're outside of typical purchasing cycles. So I would completely agree with that. They have their place and they have their purpose.
So let's assume we've got good flows in place. How do we improve that newsletter calendar?
So the first piece of advice I'd love to give is I would urge the brand to do a little bit of a mindset shift. So instead of thinking about what are we selling, I want you to think about why customers are buying. So that small shift will allow you to kind of unlock the reasons why customers should be interacting with you as a brand and what problems that you could be solving for them, be that some kind of skin concern, or you're alleviating a little bit of guilt because they want to be fashion forward but are worried about the environment. Just really zeroing in on the way that your brand is solving a customer's problem will help kind of unlock interesting content that you can send, and just being really certain about what those reasons are. That would be the first thing.
Got you. So rather than going, we're going to do dresses, then shorts, then denim, then shoes, then accessories, we're talking, actually what we're going to do is we're going to do wedding season, mother of the bride deep dive, it's too hot, and cycle through those reasons for wanting to buy rather than we've got dresses.
I think a little bit of both, right? So I think I'll go into the kind of like broad buckets of how I would start ideating a newsletter calendar, but I think you can be both. I think what my advice would be is to let those reasons ultimately underpin what you are doing. So if you do want something that's category based, start thinking, you can think again, like, okay, they do want a dress and it might be because they have an event. So let that be threaded in through your copy and your imagery and your subject lines. So I think a little bit of both for sure.
But I think you're completely right that most brands are just doing the category and product focused stuff, the what we sell stuff, and they're not flipping around to the why. Dare I ask any advice on how to find out what the why is, if anyone's going, I have no idea why they buy?
I think, no, it's a really good question. So my top advice for that would be just to speak to your customers. So I would always urge brands to regularly send surveys out to their customers, and also a step further than that, to get people on the phone or get people onto a video call. You will be so pleasantly surprised of how many people are generous with their time and generous with their thoughts. So I would always recommend just speaking to them, because as we all know, like, they're humans too, and they really want to be heard.
Awesome. Okay, so let's talk then about different categories of newsletters. I think you said different buckets is how you think about it.
Sure. So if I was going to approach a brand's newsletter calendar and start ideating on that, there are these broad kind of categories or buckets that I would put emails in. And this is how you keep things fresh when you don't necessarily have a new product. So first kind of bucket would be educational. So that'd be something like how to use, how to style. If you're a skincare brand, it's an ingredient highlight or a material spotlight, for example, you know, why this linen is special or why linen can be great in this summer month. So it's also a moment in time and it's very seasonal. So that kind of how to and what you can offer outside of the transactional is really key. Another bucket I would lean into heavily is editorial and trend led. So you can look at things like your brand story here. It's a little bit softer on the sell. Broader trends in fashion and in life, discovery of new categories, or anything. If you're a founder-led brand, founder favorites is also a really interesting one, because we have seen a big uptick in these founder-led brands and customers really connecting with the story and the people behind it. So that I would also recommend too. Adjacent to that is, of course, seasonal. So what's happening now? Is it winter? Is it summer? Is it spring? Product spotlights work really well. So if you have, you know, 5 SKUs and one of those is a day moisturizer, really zeroing into what makes that special. You can use things like infographics. You can talk about the problems that it's targeting for the individual, so they feel the connection there. And any reviews and UGC is always working really well. So you can both kind of like zoom out and zero into the things just to kind of refresh and repackage. And then with the categories that we spoke about, so you can go up or down, it could be as granular as, you know, linen mini dresses, or it could be as broad as kind of dresses as a whole. So you can play around with these things if you have, you know, any broadness to your category range. Themes are also good. So like, what ties the products together? So is there some kind of running thread through? So say again, if you've got 5 SKUs and they're all necklaces, do 3 of them feature a specific stone? And can you talk about the meaning behind that and why these things work together, or what the actual differences between them are? And then, of course, commercial. So we're looking at bestsellers, sales, gift with purchase, top rated, new in, all of those things. So obviously we realize that not all brands have a constant stream of new in, but any kind of drops that they do have, I would definitely be focusing on emails and how we can kind of preview and tease and really make the most of that in those kind of comms channels.
So I always find that when it comes to content, it's like, I don't know what I need to post. I don't know what I need to post. The actual solution always comes, just as you've outlined, and kind of like getting granular with it. What are the actual types? And then rather than just going, what can we say? Go, what can we say that's educational? What can we say that's seasonal? What can we say that's all of this? I can see that when someone's worked through all those buckets and done that bit of customer research, they're going to have like too many ideas at the end of this. So how do you structure this? I mean, we've all heard the like, you know, was it Jab, Jab, Hook or whatever it was that was the title of that book, you know, like send three normal messages and one really salesy message. How is there an obvious ratio to go with these? Does it depend on the brand? Does it depend on, you know, the sales? You know, if you've going back to my category obsession, which appears to be in this podcast today, you know, if only 5% of your sales are earrings, they're not going to make up 50% of your email sends. So how do you go about working out the mix before we even get to scheduling it week to week, day to day?
It's a really good question. So I think I always try to showcase kind of all areas of the catalogue, even if we know that certain categories perform less than others. I think sometimes that could be an awareness issue, but it's also a way of maybe reigniting attention for someone who's always spent time in your jeans category and didn't actually really understand that you had belts. So I would not shy away from testing and experimenting, because it's the only way we can learn what's going to really resonate with the audience, because sales data is fine, but so much of these things are actually emotional. So we can't measure it. We have to see how it goes. I would say, you know, you need to really think about the seasonal category. So like Father's Day, Wimbledon, these things are only going to happen in June. So you have to be aware of that. And then I think it's about looking at what's sold in the past, but also what are people searching for on site. So when I worked at Truva, obviously we're talking multi-SKUs, many SKUs, but I would often shape some of the email content based on not necessarily what people were buying, but what people were searching for and understanding if there were trends within those terms. So look around and see what's working for other channels and on site before. But I wouldn't necessarily say there's an obvious logical way of doing things. I would say, apart from things that are happening now and are seasonal, you need to just test and iterate and find out what works well with your audience.
Yeah. So we're not going to start off when we've got this big list of ideas going, right, we're going to work through all the editorial and trends ideas over the next 2 months. No, we're going to do one, then another, and start getting some idea of what our audience actually responds to.
Absolutely. Also, yes, like what you said there, I would just mix it up. You could do one editorial, one product focus, one UGC. So just, again, it's about keeping it fresh. If you did constant product spotlights, it would just stop resonating and you might see some fatigue. So that's part of the freshness, right? Looking at a different way of merchandising what you have in front of you.
And then the other, you know, one of the biggest, most annoying questions in email marketing, actually, no, the biggest, most annoying question in email marketing is, which day should I send my emails on? We're not going there, everyone. Mm-hmm. We're not going there. You know the answer, and there isn't one. But the kind of like one of the second most annoying questions in email marketing is, how many times should I be sending my newsletter? Which, of course, in the context of what we're talking about here, is hugely important, because it's how many ideas do we actually get to deploy? If we're one email a fortnight, we're only going to get through 24 in a year. Quick maths there. But if we're sending one, you know, five a week, say, then we've got an awful lot more we can do. So how do you kind of get a good angle on that before you know how much you can send?
So I'm going to look at that in a couple of ways. So firstly, I'm going to think about it from a customer perspective. So for me, understanding the perfect cadence of newsletters, I would be looking at how people are responding to them. So keep sending to people as long as they're engaging with you, opens clicking, going through to your website. As long as people are doing that, feel free to keep sending to them, but also look at the other metrics. So how many unsubscribes are you driving? How many kind of customers are you churning by sending a higher volume? Is it worth it in the long run? I've worked with a brand recently and we found essentially that people who are subscribed to email had a 67% bigger chance of repurchasing than people who weren't subscribed to the email. So it's really important to nurture your list. So look at those signals that people are sending. If they're still engaging with you, that's fine. The other way I'm going to look at it is team and in-house. So to send more emails, you would to send more emails of a certain quality and what you really want to represent your brand, you also have to think about the people and the teams who are going to be creating them. So there are things that you can do. You can template certain layouts. And if something works for you, then definitely be creative and how you can repurpose and reuse that layout and that framing. But I would also look at getting a read on what's working with your audience and then sending out the ones that are working the best and building up from there, because you're not always going to have the resource on your team to send 5 emails a week, nor should you need to. So I would say it's all about testing, learning, understanding if people are engaging with you, but looking at the bigger picture and looking at things like your monthly unsubscribes, how many people are coming onto the base and how quickly they're leaving and things like that, as well as really being ruthless in your prioritization within your team so that you're sending out the ones that you know are working the best. So you don't, so that everyone can have time to execute them to a high standard and also understand and analyze how they went.
I love that you bring in the team capacity into that, because I think it so often gets forgotten, you know, and it's like, oh, an email is an email is an email. No, an email is a good email when we've had the time to research it, create it well, deploy it and learn from it.
Absolutely.
It's like if your team's currently failing to do that on 2 sends a week, don't take them up to 5. You need to find a way to enable them to get the lessons from it so they can improve. Otherwise, you're just creating content for the sake of content, which is not,
absolutely
not a good idea. Kate, anything we've missed there that the audience needs to know? Or have we covered everything that they should know about when we're talking about how to be interesting when you have nothing to share?
I think we've covered a lot of it. I would just say that, as always, like, email doesn't live in a silo. It's not an island. So when you're thinking about your email marketing as a whole, please take into consideration the other channels that people could possibly be engaging with: your SMS, your WhatsApps, your unboxing experience, your direct mail, because email is just one part of it. But I think we covered everything in terms of how to keep it interesting and keep it fresh. And it really just comes down to thinking about why your customer should be engaged with you and why they're buying from you, and thinking about all those different ways that you can repackage and repurpose the things that you have, because there will be lots of interesting ways that you can frame it.
Awesome. Thank you, Kate. It's been great picking your brains about all of this. Listeners, remember to stay tuned right to the end so you don't miss out on Kate's insider tips on email marketing and my suggestions for more free resources to help you improve things even further in your businesses. I think it would be impossible to be in e-commerce and not have heard of Klaviyo. Over 193,000 brands in over 80 countries use Klaviyo to drive their email marketing, SMS campaigns, and sales performance. The way Klaviyo are incorporating AI and personalization across the platform is one to watch for all of us, enabling their users to really push ever upwards the performance of their customer communications. If you want to see what you can now get with the Klaviyo platform, maybe have a poke around to work out if it's yet time to migrate, then you can sign up for a free trial right now. Just head to keepopt.com/Klaviyo and find out if it's time for you to make the move. Okay, Kate, so far we've gone deep into how to be interesting when you have nothing to share. Now you get to wow us with your insider knowledge about the whole of email marketing. So for the following questions, your answer can be anything to do with email marketing, which of course does include everything we've already been talking about. Kate, are you ready for the insider tips?
Ready.
Awesome. Let's start with newbie advice. If we've inspired someone to take their first step, what do they need to know to give themselves the best chance of success?
So for this, I would just underpin everything with the knowledge that your customers are human. So at the end of every email, every screen, every ad is a person, and that person is forming their own unique opinions about the brand. And as we all know, a reputation takes a long time to build and a short time to destroy. So let that knowledge guide you when you're making decisions around what you should and shouldn't be doing. And the numbers that you see on a page are a person, you know, walking around, and they have a certain opinion of you. And you can very easily make that really positive or make it negative. And once it's become negative, it's really hard to get it back. And on the flip side, as I mentioned earlier, the fact that they are humans means that they really want to be heard. So use that to your advantage and speak regularly to them and let those stories really guide your customer journeys.
Now, once you've started, of course, you've got to keep optimizing. So what's your favorite way to improve performance?
So I'm going to say it's got to be testing and iterating. I used to work in a business where my manager, whose opinion I really respected, had some advice where he would always say to me, like, don't tinker. So take the big swings, because the big swings are the ways that we're going to really learn something quickly. And they're the ways that you're going to change things for the better. And you're going to learn the lessons. So for me, I would always say test and iterate, and do that by not tinkering and taking big swings. And also for team leads to give their teams the space and the permission to do that. So not everything needs to be a button color change as an A-B test, but do something bigger and you will see a bigger result, especially if you're a small team and you're a small brand. Like, just do it. Take the big swings.
I love that. Take the big swings and stop tinkering. Brilliant. I definitely need that written somewhere in my sight line. If someone listening wants to learn more, is there a cheap or free resource you would recommend?
So I'm going to plug my own Substack here. So I write a Substack called Kept. So that's keptbykate.substack.com. So please join me on there, because I talk about email, loyalty, retention, all of that good stuff. And outside of that, I truly believe that podcasts are some of the greatest free resources that they have. So obviously shout out to Keep Optimizing. But I'd also love to recommend Building Brand Advocacy, which is an amazing podcast with some brilliant guests. So founders and kind of heads of brand, heads of marketing, who are so generous in their tips and stories. It's just very, very inspirational. And then on a personal development level, I absolutely love Working Hard by Grace Beverly. I think she does a brilliant job of giving career and business advice, and again, using a really rounded panel of guests. So big shout out to those.
Oh, love those. Two juicy podcasts for you all to go and have a listen to. Thank you very much for those, Kate. Now, finally, it's crystal ball time. What's coming up in the next 6 to 12 months that we should be getting ready for?
So I'm going to do something that's kind of email marketing adjacent and just dip my toe into loyalty very slightly here. But one of the things that I'm seeing and also hearing about is the idea of experiential loyalty. So what that means is customers are becoming a little bit fatigued when it comes to discounts and money off, and really how they want to be rewarded and shown appreciation is to create an experience and something that money can't buy. So that's how you're going to get the connection between the brand and the consumer. And this is what I believe that smart retention focused brands will be focusing on in the upcoming years.
Yeah, I think you're so absolutely spot on. As we move into kind of a not post AI world, but a what really matters world, and that human experiential connection is all. So I love that. Kate, we're very nearly at the end of the show though. So could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business?
Of course. So you can find me over on LinkedIn. It's Kate Hammond. You can visit my website, which is www.sunbeam.marketing, or please join me on Substack and subscribe at www.keptbykate.substack.com, where I'll, as I said, be talking about email, CRM, loyalty and all that good stuff. So I'd love to see you there.
Awesome. So go get signed up to that Substack, and we'll make sure there's links to all of that in the show notes on the website for you, Kate. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. This has been an awesome way to kick off our latest series on email marketing. So thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Great insight there from Kate on how to kind of get past that mental block of what should we be talking about, but also deeply into what should you be talking about to drive the performance. Now, the first point she made was that you need your flows in place to do the heavy lifting to drive those sales based on customer actions. And then your newsletter, you get then have more freedom with what you put in that, which enables you to do the real loyalty, retention, connection building activity. Then we talked about those buckets that she was talking about, all those different types. So don't just think an email about our products. Think about, are we talking about seasons? Are we going deep on a product? Are we talking about events? Are we talking about editorial content? Is it founder story content? Think of all those buckets. Now, they'll probably be different for your business, but work out what they are for your business and then think about what content you can be sending about each of those. Obviously, to help you, you need to switch from that what we sell into why they buy mindset to create the really valuable content that's really going to drive long-term results. And then work and optimize to see what the right quantity of emails to get the quality and the analysis and the ongoing optimization is for your team and what your customers also respond to. Then slot in those and test, optimize, see what works in those buckets and what works in those email content ideas. You can get the links to all those things we discussed, the full transcript of the episode, the notes and more at keepoptimizing.com. You can also use our special director episode short links. That's keepopt.com/the number of this episode, which will take you straight to the right page of the website. And when you get there, please do add yourself to my email list so you don't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Keep Optimizing podcast. If you've enjoyed this one and want to continue learning about email marketing right now, then none of the rest of this series is yet available to you, but you can pick up our thread from last time we covered it. So scroll back up your feed to episodes 254 to 258, which was the last time we went deep into email marketing. We covered several different aspects of how to make it work for your store, including pop-ups, welcome campaigns, customer retention, and SMS. So lots there to get into. You can also find our full thread of email marketing content via the short link keepopt.com/email. Finally, please do tell your fellow marketers about the Keep Optimizing podcast, because we create it to help as many of you as possible to improve the performance of your e-commerce marketing. Have a great week and make sure you listen to the next episode so I can help you to keep optimizing your marketing.
Access everything Keep Optimizing at keepoptimizing.com. That's with an S, not a Z.
Time to migrate to Klaviyo? keepopt.com/Klaviyo for your free trial.